You're going to love Michael Chernow. I unfortunately cannot be there. Tim Nye is covering for me. I'm in Vegas. We are working on some secret operation. You're going to love this podcast.
Welcome back to Spotting Up the Podcast. We are here again in sunny Pittsfield, Vermont. Sunny today. It was snowy yesterday. This gentleman owns one of the best fish restaurants in New York City, amongst many restaurants that he owns. An incredible businessman.
Cool chef, philosophy.
Great philosophy. Great way of treating his staff. I think we've got a lot to learn from this.
Owned by?
Michael Chernow.
Beautiful. Well, let's go talk to him and see what he's got to say.
Let's go swim in the sea.
Let's go.
All right, we're here today with Michael Chernow in one of his restaurants here in New York City. Seymour's, how many restaurants do you have here in the city?
So this is my seventh restaurant.
And they're all active?
All active in New York. We're building an eighth right now.
Holy moly. So we'll get into that, but you don't look like you don't look old enough to have seven restaurants running simultaneously. I mean, I would think that would take some while to build up.
You know, I've been working in the restaurant business since I'm a kid. I have a work ethic like a maniac monster. When I turned 28 years old, I took the leap of faith and I opened up my first business with my business partner, Daniel. It's called The Meatball Shop. It's on the Lower East Side. We opened up that restaurant and it was sort of a runaway success. I was 28, Daniel was 29 or 30 maybe. And 3 months after that, you know, there was, I don't want to jinx myself, but there was really a line of guys that wanted to put money in to grow that business.
Yeah.
And so we, the next year we opened up two more. And then every year since we've opened up one. After the fifth restaurant, I decided that I wanted to take a sidestep from the day-to-day operations there because it just didn't need two captains to run the ship. We sort of knew what we were doing at that point. And I became very passionate about fishing and seafood, and I love fishing. And so I wanted to open up this place, Seymour's, which really highlights New York fish, local, sustainable New York fish.
So walk me back a little bit then. So your background, you say you got into this very young, young teens or so. What was that, just by happenstance, by chance, or how did you say, I want to go into a restaurant business? I mean, what was the first step?
Well, my mother and father didn't have a lot of money, and I was 13, 14 years old growing up in New York City, and there's a lot of people around here, and everybody's wearing nice things, and you know, and
as a kid,
I wanted to be one of them, and I knew that, you know, I don't blame my parents for not, they did the best they could, but I knew I needed to work in order to be where I wanted to be, and so I got a job, and the only place that would hire me was a restaurant. So I started delivering food at a young age, and actually before that, when I was around 10, 11 years old, I started a dog walking business. And so I walked every single dog in a two-block radius in my neighborhood. And so I probably had 14 dogs or something like that by the end. And then my mother knew that I was, like, serious about, you know, making something happen. And when I told her I wanted to get a job in a restaurant, she said, go for it. So they hired me. I delivered food for the restaurant. I delivered food for Couch Potato Videos, which is next door. I delivered videos. And I just sort of always have been this entrepreneurial spirit kind of guy. Like, I always wanted to do it. I found my passion in people, and that's sort of where my passion resides, in like making people happy. I enjoy making people happy.
Yeah, and food makes people happy.
Food makes people happy. It's the easiest way to make people happy.
But as Joe DeSena would tell you, the right kind of food, right? I mean, sure. You got to be careful how much enjoyment, how much happiness you get out of eating, right?
Absolutely.
I could sit and eat all day. I absolutely love food. But let me also say, don't ever apologize for wanting to have worked hard, especially as a kid, and want something. I worked in many restaurants, washing dishes, bussing tables. I owned a bar, I guess, when I was 23 years old. So I kind of walked down some of those same lanes a bit. You know, it's a great learning environment. It's a place where, you know, you will make it or not based upon your own skills, right?
Sure.
You know, how hard you work, and obviously you've done phenomenally well at it.
Thank you. So
what I do, I have a question that maybe will get us off topic here a little bit. I see there's a trend. I read about a trend, or maybe one spot where they're taking away the tipping and make it a flat service here in New York City. Is that, what's your thoughts on that?
I think it's a brilliant idea, because there's a big controversy within most restaurants between the kitchen and the front of the house, the servers, the bartenders, right? basically the guys in the kitchen don't make as much money as the guys in the front of the house because the guys in the front of the house make tips.
Right.
These guys get paid an hourly rate. And it is not legal for them to share in the tips because they're getting tipped on their service. So what Danny Meyer, who's sort of my mentor, and he is really just an icon in the business, you know, across the globe, actually. People, he's a sought-after restaurateur. I've been lucky enough to have spent some time with him over the years. And he is at the helm of this no-tipping movement. And so I was actually with him on Friday talking about it. And, you know, it's changing behavior is not easy. You know, changing behavior, it's like going from cash to credit cards.
Sure.
Most people, when that happened in the late 70s, early 80s, were like,
what do you mean?
Yeah, my only question would have been based upon what we were talking about earlier about merit, if you will. So if the playing field of all the waiters and waitresses are even, and I as a customer don't feel the need to give the tip, do the waiters and waitresses then work at the same level of quality?
It's a very, very good point. You know, and it is absolutely a concern for, I think, most operators in the business. It's not something that is the first concern from me, only because hiring is a huge, like, pillar of success for me. I take hiring very seriously. And so I feel like no matter what we do as a company, if it's within the culture, the staff is going to be happy.
And if they're not working hard, it'll probably show up in other areas anyway.
If that person is going to react that way, they probably shouldn't be on board in the first place.
All right, so talk to me also about you spent some time out in California.
Sure.
Kind of developing your skill set as well. And what were you doing out there? What was it like out there?
You know, I attempted to live in California twice just because I love being out there. I very quickly found out after a year that I needed to come back home and really ground myself before I can venture out to another town. Came back to New York City. When I was 23 years old, I made a big decision in my life and I changed everything. I literally just changed everything over. I stopped drinking alcohol, stopped partying, and got serious. And I went out there because I wanted to just breathe a little bit. I felt like I was getting a little tight here in New York. So I went out to California. I gave myself 4 months. I just wanted to just refresh myself. And I went out there, and it was I learned a lot. I learned a lot because I wasn't occupied by old behaviors, you know. And when I went out there, I knew I wasn't moving out there, but I knew I just wanted to go out there.
Yeah, well, change of scenery.
Little change of scenery.
Yeah,
and I did. And I came back here, and then I got right to work.
Now, where did the love for fishing, where did you develop
as a kid.
That? But growing up here, where do you do
so
that?
So I grew up here, and on the weekends I was part of a sports program.
Oh, right.
On the weekends, every Sunday we would always go out to Captree or Freeport, Long Island, get on a party boat and go fishing. And I have some of my greatest memories fishing in Long Island, and all these fish that you see up on this wall here. 90% of them are all fish that you can pull out of the water right out of the Long Island Sound. Being in restaurants for such a long time and not seeing any of these species of fish featured on any menus because it's all about tuna, salmon, cod, and sea bass, and scallops, and lobster, there are some underutilized species, some species of fish that you just never see, like dogfish, for instance.
Okay.
Dogfish
unless you're drinking a beer from Delaware.
Exactly. Right, so dogfish ale is essentially named after dogfish, which is it's a small shark. It's essentially a sand shark, but nobody eats it. And I think the reason why nobody eats it, though it's delicious, is because they're afraid to put dogfish on their menu. And you know, people are apprehensive.
Just the name.
The name.
All right. Well, I think we're going to take a break right now.
Okay.
Talk amongst ourselves here a little bit, and then we come back and we're going to talk a little bit more. Kind of life lessons, what you've learned and how to apply that to everybody else. And I also notice you're in very good shape, so I want to talk a little bit about fitness with you.
Great.
I hope you're not sitting still while you listen. If you are, you better get a burpee break in.
All right, we're back. We're here in Seymour's Restaurant here in New York City. As we went away, we talked about life lessons and how we apply what you've learned in the restaurant business to kind of a bigger framework, if you will. And what are some of those things that anybody can kind of take away from your success. And I attribute that to working in the restaurant, but really your just success in life. Kind of what has driven you? What have you found to work for you?
Three things, really.
All right.
The first being the business of business is relationships. And the more relationships you have, positive relationships you have, or from what I've learned in my experience, the more positive relationships I have, the easier and more business comes my way. And so I never judge anybody who I'm sitting with or who's sitting around
thank
me.
You.
But I always act as if I am sitting with, you know, somebody that I'd love to have a long-term relationship with, because, you know, there's been times where I've sat with other people and they, you know, I don't look like a guy that owns 7 restaurants.
Sure.
I mean, I'm just a normal guy. I mean, when I'm in the restaurant at night, people think I'm a busboy, and I love that. But at the end of the day, you know, I believe that you have to, you know, you the business relationships, and it's always worth trying your best and going above and beyond to try to develop relationships, garner and cultivate relationships with everybody you can, because you never know who they are and you never know what can happen in the future. Another thing that I've learned is the only way to get things done is not by wanting, trying, or needing. It's by doing.
It's almost a little Yoda-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is no try, there's only do, right?
Yeah, well, there's no, I mean, if you want something, that's great, but if you need something, that's also great, but the only really way to get something done is to do it. And I've wanted many things, I've needed many things, and I've tried many things, and the only things I've actually got were the things that I just went headfirst and done. And I think as an entrepreneur, in a really competitive market like New York, you know, you have to you sort of have to be fearless, and you know, make educated decisions. But ultimately, if you overanalyze things, I feel like sometimes you find yourself in a corner counting numbers when you should actually be out there working.
Well, you got to hire the right people to count those numbers for you, though, right?
Exactly. I mean, exactly.
You got to trust them.
Yeah. Okay. And then I guess the last piece for me is I invest all my time, energy, and skill into my team. You know, most people would say in the restaurant business, the guest is always first. The guest is always first. In most businesses, the consumer's first, the customer's first. For me, my staff is first, way beyond the customer or the guest or the consumer, because I know that if my staff is first and they feel my support and we are a team in one unit, everybody's happy. And if everybody's happy on the staff side, everybody's happy on the guest side.
Yeah, look, I really like that, because again, for me, background in the military, obviously it's all about teamwork, cohesion, esprit de corps, all of those kind of things. So those things that you can do to bring those people together and make bond, you know, really make a tight unit. And just, we're here at the Lunch Crowd, and for people who can't see this and only listening, it's crowded, and you know, it always seems to me that if you want to get good service, always go to a crowded restaurant, right? If you go to a lonely one, there's a reason it's lonely. It's always the worst service. Come to a place where it's busy and it's always best. I think because those crews, if you will, get very efficient at what they're doing, right? And they become very, very skilled, and so they're always the best to go to.
It's funny you say crew. As an eater,
you know, that's what I...
We call ourselves crew. That's our thing.
Right.
That's our internal sort of... dialogue, and crew to me is like it's stronger than a team, you know.
You think crew, you think boat, at least I do, and you think the rowing and the coordination, the synchronization, the cohesion required to do that, right? So you've got to all be moving at the same exact, everybody's got to know what the other person's doing to move that thing forward in the most efficient manner. And again, to have 7 restaurants up and running at one time, and you said it, in an environment like New York City, just absolutely blows my mind, because I can just imagine what all the different cogs are moving at the same time to be able to accomplish that. And yet, to sit and look at you, you look as calm as can be. We're taking 20 minutes of your time. You haven't even looked around. You haven't checked your watch. You haven't like stared at a waitress. I mean, in a manner that would make you think that they were doing something wrong. So it's just been amazing sitting here and watching you do this. But Also, I know a little bit, I've been told you put together a fitness model for your wait staff, can you, or the, I guess the whole restaurant,
the whole staff,
right?
Yeah.
The whole crew. So tell me a little bit about that.
So when I launched this restaurant, I wanted to do something a little bit different. And, the restaurant business has this kind of true stereotype of smoking cigarettes, drinking beer, and banging in the walk-in. You know what I mean? I mean, that's literally what the word on the street is about working in the restaurant business. And I wanted to change that, at least, in these four walls. And so I said, we're going to be a well-minded group of people. And if you can get with that, your seat is here for you. If you can't get with that, you can see your way out the door. There's no drinking here. There's no smoking cigarettes here. And not because I don't like drinking and judge people who smoke cigarettes. It's just not what we do. And so I'm not saying if you smoke cigarettes, you can't work here.
Right, not
just
here.
Don't do it anywhere around here. Don't go a couple blocks away, because I don't want our guests to see that. And on top of that, we're gonna do this fitness program that you don't have to do, but if you want to do it, you're more than welcome to. And I'm gonna pay for every single person to go to every single fitness studio in this area once a week on Wednesday mornings. So I'll lead a run 1 week, and then we'll go to a fitness studio 1 week, and then I'll lead a boot camp the next week, and then we'll go to Muay Thai kickboxing down the street the following week. So we have this schedule where we go to. We there's nothing that we're not afraid to do. I mean, we do this amazing cycling class down the road, down the street here. That's just, people have never done it before, and it's just awesome. And so the staff just, like, they get together, they love it, they're like proud to say they're part of the Fit Squad, they wave their flag, and it's awesome.
I tell you what, it's a phenomenal model. I mean, I've never heard of anything like that before. I know big corporations try to encourage their people to work out, but. On a level like this, I've just never heard of a manager, owner, a founder, CEO, whatever, taking the time to lead them, but also to worry about their health and fitness in that manner and try to educate them.
So, it's a humongous part of my life. Without fitness and eating the right thing, I'm a complete crazy person. And so, I know what makes me happy. I feel like if I can shed a little bit of light on somebody else's life, maybe they're having a bad, bad week, come in and hang out with the crew. And
well, have you found it's had a positive influence?
Humongous.
And what about overall? Do you cut? I don't know if you'd be able to tell this. Cut down on sick days or sick hours, or are they a healthier?
Well, I'll tell you what they have done. Since the Fit Squad started, they've created a running team amongst themselves.
All right, so they gear up for your one day.
So yeah, but during the week they all run together now.
Okay, great.
And it's made an impact on the industry, actually, because other restaurateurs are saying, "Hey, Mike, can you talk to me about your Fit Squad?" And then yoga studios, Soho Strength Lab across the street, all these people
when can
you guys come by, or can we send one of our guys in to see you do a strength and conditioning class in your house? I mean, it's so cool because we take all the tables and chairs, we push them to the sides, and we'll do a full on. I mean, I use the chairs for boot camp where they're jumping on tables, they're jumping, they're doing step ups, they're running sprints around the block. I mean, it's incredible.
Wow. So where are you doing this tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow morning, Wednesday,
right?
Yeah, tomorrow morning we actually have a yoga instructor coming in here. We have 15 yoga mats downstairs, and that's actually when a lot of people show up because yoga's not as tough. 8 a.m.
8 a.m., we'll have a camera ready if that's all right.
All right.
We'll catch you doing some yoga.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
sure.
I don't have any tights, or maybe I would do it, but that's not... I don't know. Our founder, Joe DeSena, is a huge yoga enthusiast.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he believes in it. His mother got him into it in the 70s, doing all the yoga stuff. So he's been a practitioner of it his whole life, and really kind of attributes to that a lot to his success in the endurance racing world.
Yeah.
So it's got great benefits.
Well, I believe that, for me, my wife is a yoga teacher, I'm a fitness dude, and I really love to get my sweat on, I mean, I really enjoy getting sweat. And for the last 6 months, I've stopped. I'm a Muay Thai practitioner, so I train Muay Thai, compete in Muay Thai, and it's never been about lifting weights. It's always been about body weight. I'm not supposed to put on size when I'm training Muay Thai because it slows you down a little bit. But for the last 6 months, I've done only weight training and a little running. But I've really tried to change it up just to see what's out there for me.
Well, the body responds well to that. If you do the same routine over and over and over again, you'll plateau, right? I mean, you kind of have to shock the body.
Yeah.
And you got to get it to want to try the new thing. Want to try to do new things, right? So, great.
Well, a bunch of guys have invited me to do this Go Ruck. Have you heard of Go Ruck?
Yep. Yep.
So a bunch of guys, and that's the kind of thing where I'm like, I love a challenge like that.
All right, well, I'm going to go Ruck is great, and that's fine, but I'll challenge you to do one better. All right, have you seen our Gogi?
The what?
Our Gogi.
No, but
our
I want six, to.
Our 60-hour endurance event.
That sounds like fun.
So I'll give you the online, you can find our winter edition, 001 of Gogi, where we had up in Vermont early February, I think. Got down about 15 below, wind chill down about 35 below. These guys stayed outside for the entire time.
Wow.
Building fires, building shelters, trying to cook their food, just carrying water buckets, 5-6 guys strapped to 2x4s, having to move in unison like we were talking, rowing a boat, 4 miles, 4 hours kind of through the woods at night, trying to stay. So we do a summer rotation and we do a winter rotation. So we'll get you on one of those.
I would love that.
We'll get you away from here, like I said, about 2.5 days, and maybe a half day recovery, because it'll challenge you, whether it's summer or winter. So train up with a good Go Ruck, maybe a good Spartan race, and then come see us for the Agogi, because that's kind of going to be like the top dog. Yeah. All right. Anything else?
Want to ask my favorite exercise?
Yeah. So what of all the exercises that you do? What is the one you come back to? What is the one you like the best?
You know, I honestly think that for me, running is something that I, you know, my body is so used to running at this point. I'm a long distance runner. I'm a sprinter. I'm all that stuff. But I ground myself with running. So if I ever need to just, you know, get a good workout in, and I know that I would like to just spend some time alone, I go take a run. But I got to say, I've fallen in love with weight training. I really have.
All right, so we'll wrap up with that.
All right, man.
Hey, appreciate you.
He's done a great job, both visually and, visually in the marketing. In his restaurant, he has all of those local fishes that he uses, the dogfish, like fishes that you don't usually see on most menus, where we know that our seas are vastly dwindling of a lot of the popular fishes, tunas and such, things like that. So it's great to see that he's popularizing these delicious fish that people just don't know because they're not familiar with their names. It reminds me of my friends who own a restaurant, and they do a big push on lionfish. Lionfish is an invasive species that goes all the way from the Chesapeake up north, and it's got quills. My friends and I, we spear gun shoot it. When you spear gun shoot it, freaks out, and it can give you what's it called when you go into shock? That you need Benadryl?
So anaphylaxis.
Anaphylactic, thank you.
Fishy Benadryl?
No, fishy Benadryl.
Here's
you
got to
watch out when you first kill, but afterwards, if you slice off the spires of it, it's a delicious fish. It's amazing. It's what all the restaurants should be serving because it's taking over the native ecologies. Anyways, just a little plug on ocean health and fisheries. But let's get into some of the meat of this interview.
We've talked to other restaurateurs on our podcast. The restaurant business is a tough, tough business, super competitive. And then you take that and you implant it into the environment of New York City, and it becomes even harder. Mm-hmm. And yet at a relatively young age, I think he's only 35 or so, has got 7 restaurants up and running at once. Yeah. And he's kind of got a little bit different business model than many restaurateurs, having worked in a few restaurants in my life. He doesn't allow his employees to smoke or drink on the premises. Mm-hmm. He's into health. He, as we saw, he takes them out and does yoga. Takes him out on runs, takes him to spin classes. So he's not only into the health of his business, but he's also into the health of his people, mm-hmm. because it's all intertwined, right? So that's a totally different mindset than I think any restaurateur that I'm aware of, anyway.
Yep. He says business is a business of relationships, isn't he? He understands that it's the people that matter, the people that create these sort of incredible restaurants that he's been able to develop, like you said, at a young age.
And I can tell you, whatever he's teaching his staff or his crew, as he put it, is working, because as Marion, who's behind the counter, as the two of us went in there, and I think Marion would agree, every single person we met in the restaurant that worked there, from the cook all the way up to the receptionist, extraordinarily polite and professional. Just happy to be there, happy to be at work, and happy to make you feel good about being in their restaurant.
And I think that helps carry along our analogy here of the ship, right? A ship functions well when everyone's working in harmony and they all are there for the same purpose, the same goal. And and I love how he uses his own restaurant as like a multi-use space, right? Like if you can have your culture and your branding go across more than just the conventional, here's my pamphlet sticker and my card. But when it goes into, like, you see it in their demeanor, the way they handle themselves, what they're dressing, what they're doing, what they're even talking about, that makes for a much stronger brand culture. You look at some of these Clif Bars or Lululemons or other people that we've talked to that really promote their corporate culture to really be a mirror of their brand, then it's just like Joe is Spartan. I mean, when any of us around him, we're not throwing back wine or eating cupcakes, you know. So.
Oh, no. That would be double burpees.
He also mentioned, when you talk about building up a great staff, he used the expression, you don't need two captains on a ship. And you look at how can a guy that young have that many restaurants? And I think that's part of it, is that once he's elevated somebody to the point where they're as skilled as he is, rather than competing with each other in that space, just go open another restaurant. And the
delegate.
Idea that, yeah, and the idea that you can... I think that if you see people that way, they don't become a threat, because sometimes people don't want their people to get that good because they'll leave you. And his thing is, hey, we'll just let's get another ship.
That's like the military, right?
Well, I mean, but he's not afraid of competition.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, if he was, he wouldn't have seven restaurants, right?
Yeah, sure.
So again, we've always talked a lot about the fear of failure. Mm-hmm. I don't think he has it. I think he's an optimistic guy who's looking forward to success.
And then I just love, he says, You don't want or try or need. He's like, just do it. And again, we hear that same sort of thing. It's like that guy, Tim Morris, who said, when you put something in the future and you just talk about it, you're not doing it. He's like, just forget all else. And you just got to kind of just lean in, as Del was referencing, and do it. And he's doing it.
So we want you to do. We want you to go to SpartanUpPodcast.com. If you're listening on iTunes, watch us on YouTube as well. You're missing a lot of great visuals on the show. But whether you're on iTunes or YouTube, definitely comment, post a review, and subscribe for sure so you don't miss future episodes. We've got a lot of great ones coming.
Thank you for listening to another epic story of success.
We hope you enjoy the episode. To find more show notes, audio, and video, please visit us at SpartanUpPodcast.com.
The Spartan Up Podcast is brought to you by Spartan.
To find a race near you, visit Spartan.com.